You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to Issues Etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues Etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
I used to want to save the world. This beautiful place. But the closer you get, the more you see the great darkness within. I learned this the hard way a long, long time ago.
What is your mission?
To stop the war.
What war?
The war to end all wars.
Weapons far deadlier than you can ever imagine.
The war can be ours.
Whoever you are in more danger than you think.
I cannot stand by while innocent lives are lost.
Be careful, Diana.
Who is this woman?
She's my secretary,
sir. She's a very good secretary.
It is our sacred duty to defend the world, and it's what I'm going to do.
That's a trailer from the recently released Wonder Woman movie, hailed by some as a feminist film or others as an anti-feminist film. What does it do with the themes of good and evil? All of these superhero films have to deal in some way with good and evil. Does it drink from the fountain of postmodernism and blur the distinction between the two? We're going to be reviewing this film with Pastor Ted Giese on this Thursday afternoon, June the 15th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
This movie, when it was released, Wonder Woman, was either hailed as a pro-feminist film and at the same time sometimes condemned as an anti-feminist film. Do you have an opinion on the subject?
Boy, yeah. I don't know. Yes, it seems like it has a lot of pro-feminist qualities in it. I mean, it's the central character is a woman, you know, and also it's directed by a woman. In fact, Patty Jenkins, she had directed a movie called Monster back in 2003, a very complicated kind of movie. That was her directorial debut. And she's done a bunch of TV, including Arrested Development. But this is like the biggest box office opening for a female director, I guess, in the history of keeping track of these things. So this is, a big score in that way as well. I think that the thing that makes it complicated, it seems, is that there are a lot of kind of traditional values that are in this film, but there is still some kind of peculiar oddities that are kind of sprinkled through it, and that is part of the source material itself. Like, the Wonder Woman comic book first came out in 1941, and it was written by a man, William Moulton Marston. He's got a doctorate in psychology from Harvard University, and he brings to it a bunch of like feminist ideas, but also some other kind of peculiar things, and they kind of crop up here and there in the movie. So I don't really know what to make of it all, actually. You know, when you're watching the film, it's all just kind of swirling around there. And I think that, you know, this is why there's a bit of confusion.
What universe, what comic book universe are we in with Wonder Woman?
Okay, so we're in the DC comic book universe. So this is not Marvel. So like over in Marvel, you've got, I guess the counterpart over in Marvel would be Thor. Because Thor is like a Norse god, and, you know, you got Odin and all of that kind of stuff. And that, but Thor didn't come out until the 60s. So this Wonder Woman comic book originally came out with DC, and it's still part of the DC, you know, comic book franchise and part of this DC cinematic universe. And so we're talking Batman and Superman and like that kind of stuff. So this character of Wonder Woman, played by Gal Gadot, first emerged in the Batman versus Superman movie that we, Dawn of Justice, that we had previously done a review of. And that's where this Wonder Woman kind of, for the cinematic universe, first pops up in this new iteration of all of this. So now this is her standalone kind of quote-unquote origin story, I guess. And here she is, the way that the movie kind of puts together, like I was saying, think Thor. This here, we've got the a daughter of Zeus. So you've got like the Greek pantheon and not like Norse mythology. But this is what the comic book writers were drawing on as part of all of this. So she is an Amazon warrior princess who has left her island paradise and come into this world to, in this film, to be a part of World War One, essentially.
Is she... you made the comparison here several times with the Thor character. Is she a demigod? Is she, or is she, you know, Superman is an alien. Batman is a very well-equipped and trained human being. What's she?
Yeah, I mean, this is what it comes down to, is that she is like a, you know, from the Greek pagan pantheon, she's like a demigod kind of character connected to all of those ideas. So even in the movie itself, she says that, you know, she was formed out of clay, and, you know, she's the daughter of Zeus. So she has no, like, you know, that's the way she's described. So yeah, we're in that kind of pantheon of Greek pagan mythology that she's connected with.
And you said this is standalone. No other superheroes appear in this one?
Yeah, no, there's no other superheroes in this movie. This is her standalone story. And it's alluded to in that Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice, because at one point, you know, Batman, Bruce Wayne, finds this photograph, and it's a photograph from World War One of Wonder Woman with a kind of a cadre of guys. And now all of those guys in that picture are now characters in this film, and she's along, they're kind of along with her for the ride of this story. It starts off with Chris Pine playing the part of Steve Trevor, which is a kind of a counterpart guy who's connected to her in these comic books. And he's a spy working in World War One, and he lands by accident on, his airplane gets shot down, he ends up on Paradise Island. He tells them about World War One. She goes to fight in World War One. She goes with him. And you get kind of like a fish out of water story for the first third of the film, and then she kind of really gets into all of what's going on with World War One, and she suspects that this other Greek pagan god, Ares, the god of war, is behind all of it. So she's trying to find Ares to kill him, to confront him, to stop the war. And that's kind of what you get in this. So there's a connection back to that Batman versus Superman movie. And even in that photograph, when you see it, you instantly see Chris Pine, who people might know from the Star Trek movies. He's Captain Kirk in those movies. So it wouldn't be a good Chris Pine movie without a good motorcycle ride with Chris Pine. There's always one somehow in these movies. So he's in this, and it's this kind of fish out of water story for her as she figures out what the world is like, because she's not been a part of it. She's been secluded on Paradise Island.
You say there are some themes in this film that you wanted to talk about in the course of the review, the first one being its Christology. What do you mean by that?
So this is something that I think is a little interesting. Now, clearly this is not a direct one-to-one comparison, but you do have this character who has a different kind of coming into existence. I don't want to say that it's like incarnational, but the way that it's described is almost like, you know, Adam being formed out of the clay or out of the dirt kind of a deal. And so there's a little bit of a connection there. But of course, then she's coming from outside of the world into the world. She's the virtuous one, and she's coming to, you know, defeat one of the, you know, the enemies of mankind. So sin, death, the devil, the world. And so she's kind of like in the midst of that, trying to like, and there's a character, this Ares character, when it's finally revealed who he is, he's really more like the devil in a lot of ways. So you have that. And even at the moment where, you know, she's about to, you know, have the victory over all of this, you get that, the striking of the Christ kind of pose, as though, you know, with the arms outstretched and the feet together, like the crucifixion kind of, which shows up over and over and over and over and over again in films. So you have that kind of imagery there. What you don't have, though, of course, is you don't have like the mini, like kind of like death and resurrection thing that happens in lots of films and actually happens quite a bit in comic book movies. So she doesn't like die and come back to life. She is there to have a victory over evil. So there's a little bit of that kind of stuff in there. It's not a complete stretch, but it's also not a one-to-one comparison by any stretch of the imagination. And the clearest thing, of course, is that this is a woman and Christ was a man. So that's, you know, but I mean, Christian viewers can kind of pick up on some things along the way in this particular case. And then, of course, the vehicle by which the victory is won is love. So that's part of the film.
Okay, so you mentioned good and evil. How is the ambiguity between the two part of the film, or does the plot require that both the characters and, by extension, the viewer of Wonder Woman understand the contrast between the two?
Yeah, and I think this is kind of an interesting part of it. Like, there's the evil that's in the movie is not an obvious evil. So there is kind of an obvious evil character, and that's the one that you're generally being led to believe is Ares, the god of war in disguise. But that obvious character is not actually Ares, the god of war. It's a more subtle character that you don't expect, who's actually been kind of quietly tempting and fumigating all of the problems that are bubbling up in World War One. So you and when the revelation comes of who that villain is, then the villain is very obviously the villain and is evil and is a Satan kind of a character, which is quite interesting. But and then the additional element of the evil that shows up in this, which I think is maybe the most important thing and really popped out and I thought was really interesting, is that when Wonder Woman kills the obvious villain, who then turns out not to be the one she was looking for, and the war doesn't end, and it's still happening, it's still raging on, World War One is still raging on, then the character of Steve Trevor, played by Chris Pine, says, you know, like, you know, it's not just one man. And he says it's maybe it's all of us, that we're all part of the problem. So he has this, like he's giving you a good picture of original sin. So that evil is, you know, you're not just going to be able to kill one guy and end the war. And that's kind of an interesting part of the film, because, and maybe this is one of those little things that kind of confuses some people, because original sin is not, let's say, popular with militant feminists or even with a lot of people in general society. So that's kind of an interesting thing that I think Christians will pick up on, and they'll go, oh, look at that. That's an interesting point that's being made there in the course of the whole film. So it also sets up this idea that humanity on its own, by its own actions, even at its core, does not deserve to have a hero come in and save it, which is then kind of part of this kind of a sort of a Christology that's in there, that the idea that they're being loved even though they don't deserve it. So they're receiving some kind of grace from this character.
Pastor Ted Giese is our guest reviewing the movie Wonder Woman on this Thursday, June the 15th, when we come back. Superman doesn't have any flaws. Batman is deeply flawed. What about Wonder Woman? We'll answer that question after this. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Children are entitled to a relationship with both of their parents, and they're entitled to know who they are.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute talking about her presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And if you take that entitlement as basic and reason backwards from that, what you'll end up with is the whole traditional Christian sexual morality. Get married, stay married, and only have sex with the person you're married to.
You can meet and hear Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse making the case against the sexual revolution at the Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120 and includes three meals. Child care is free. For more information, look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Pastor Ted Giese is our guest as we review the movie Wonder Woman. Pastor Giese, you were speaking before the break about original sin. What about the main character here? In, again, to compare and contrast with the other superheroes of that universe, Superman is more or less flawless in terms of his character. Batman is, part of his character is to be deeply flawed. What about the Wonder Woman character?
Yeah, here you've got a more virtuous character, right? So she isn't willing to just go along with the flow to try to get other things done. She's not willing to compromise. She's certainly somebody who has a very clear understanding of what she sees as good and right versus what is wrong and evil. And she is quick to defend people and even to forgive people who may have done wrong but are not ultimately the villain of all of it. So she's quick to forgive people. So she does come across as a much more virtuous and clean-cut character than a Batman does. And yeah, so this again leads towards this kind of Christ-like kind of nature. But now, that's kind of glowing. So let's just back away from that for a bit. Because there are some other kind of peculiarities that are in this. And I had mentioned the original writer of the comic book, or the guy who came up with all of this, that psychologist. And the psychologist was into, had a philosophy of diametric opposites. So he was into, like, for want of a better term, bondage and submission. And, you know, a number of years ago, I read a book called American Gods, and it was all about, not the TV show, it's an actual book about comic books, and it got into some of the details about this guy. So he had this idea that if you had a really dominant, strong female, then men would follow that female and it would be good for them. So the lasso of truth and all this kind of stuff that's in there, there's these elements of kind of like bondage and kinkiness and stuff like that that are part of it. And also the island she comes from is an island all of women with no men on it. A paradise island, and there's some sexual innuendo in there that has bisexual, lesbian kind of qualities to it. So before, you know, we just go slathering on a glowing review of everything to do with Wonder Woman, that is also a part of this, and it has been historically a part of it all the way back to 1941, which is a whole different time for that stuff to be kind of cropping up, but it's there in the original comic books. And I think that that's also kind of a complicating factor in the case of this character.
You say that the filming style is something that you wanted to talk a little bit about in review.
Yeah, you know, I guess like DC is, the DC comic book movies are doing something different. Like they're going for moody, dark, plotting kind of. Now, this is probably the brightest and cheeriest in portions of these movies. But if you compare and contrast it to what Marvel's doing, Marvel's movies are more bright and vibrant and colorful, and there's more humor. This has humor in it, more humor than Batman versus Superman, or, you know, like, and it's certainly a better film than the Suicide Squad movie that's kind of part of this whole thing too. So this is kind of like their first big hit when it comes to this franchise that they're putting together. But I don't know, I'd just seen that Alien Covenant movie, and we talked about that, and that was dark, and like, it's well made, but it's dark and dreary. And this is, you know, it's set in World War One, this Wonder Woman movie, so it's trench warfare, and it's dark, and it's dreary. But I just kind of feel like, ugh, like, can we get out of this dark and dreariness and see something else? So, you know, when I think about it back to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, that contrast is obvious and stark. Like, you have bright, vibrant, colorful, more humor, and then here you've got still kind of like darker and more morose in general. And they're doing this thing that with the color grading, it's kind of a technical thing, but they are adjusting all of the lighting and stuff in such a way to make it to have that kind of darker kind of tonality to the whole film.
And then, if you would, there are some peculiarities to the Wonder Woman character that you wanted to discuss.
Yeah, and I kind of mentioned those things. This kind of weird stuff that is from the that psychologist that originally put together the comic book. And I think that maybe, and we occasionally talk about this, is like we talked about this actually with Ridley Scott in Alien Covenant, that the people who put together these stories, they bring something of themselves into the stories, right? So he had this relationship with his wife that was kind of had this kind of dominant, submissive kind of relationship thing going on with his wife, where she was dominant and he was submissive. And that came out in this comic book. And it kind of, it's in the kernels, in the source material of this stuff. And it's there throughout all of it. So one of the ways that we can think about or look at the movies that we look at is to sometimes we, just by virtue of looking into it and knowing about it and doing a little bit of research, we can find out things about the author and see how that has impact on the actual film itself, and or the final product of some future film, or you know iteration of the story that they originally came up with. So I think that, you know, like, even if you look at, like, I don't know, the works of Shakespeare, you're going to find a lot of Shakespeare in the works themselves. And this is not devoid of that. This has that in spades, this film, and Wonder Woman in general has that. So I think that while, you know, she's a very interesting, you know, character, and, you know, is on point for a lot of what people are expecting these days, there's still some things that the Christian viewer might think to themselves, well, I don't know about this and I don't know about that. And it's okay to be critical of certain aspects of whatever it is that you're looking at. Even if there's things that you really do like and appreciate in it, you can still be critical of other things that you find there.
These films often have little trailers built into them in order to extend the franchise or to get people to think about the upcoming movie that's coming out in a couple months. Does Wonder Woman have one of those?
Well, yeah, DC is kind of notorious for not doing the thing that Marvel does. Marvel is like jamming in, like it used to be that they would just have a little scene at the very end of the trailers. And partly that was to keep you sitting there to watch all the trailers, I guess. Like, not the trailers, but the post credits. But this doesn't have that. So now Marvel even has mid-credit ones. They have two mid-credit ones and then a one at the end. This doesn't have that. But what it does have is a framing device. So it starts in the present with her, getting to this box, and she's going to open this box. And then at the end of it, and she's received this box from Bruce Wayne. And at the end of the whole thing, she's opening the box and she has the photograph in it. So essentially, Bruce Wayne had gotten this photograph and it was evidence of her past life when she was in World War One and everything. And he's given it back to her as a sign of good faith that he's not going to blackmail her with this. So it has this, it's set in World War One, but it has this framing device that's in the present. And it's all leading to the new Justice League movie that's going to come out eventually that will also include Aquaman and The Flash and stuff like that. So by the time we get to that movie, they want to have established some of the main key characters like Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman.
Any pastoral concerns? You mentioned a few things that might be of concern, but anything else?
Is this movie a movie for, young kids? Probably not, just in general. I remember back when Batman versus Superman came out, and there was a young family in our congregation with some young boys, and they were too young to go see Batman versus Superman. And I would say that it's not maybe as dreary and dark as Batman versus Superman, but this one does have that dreariness in it in ways. I remember talking to these little kids and they were like, well, who won, Batman or Superman? And I said, well, Wonder Woman won, because she was the best part of that Batman versus Superman movie. So in this case, again, I would say like young children are super, this is probably not a good movie for them. I know that there will be little kids that'll go see it. I would say that it's for an older audience, for sure. And DC in general seems to be trending that direction.
Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
In hour two of Issues Etc., we're going to be talking with Molly Hemingway, Fox News contributor, about a recent New York Times editorial that blames Republicans for Wednesday's shooting at a congressional baseball practice in Alexandria, Virginia. See what she has to say about that. Then we'll go through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. Hour two of Issues Etc. in 5 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Children are a heritage from the Lord, but what of those who've not been given the gift of a child? The cross of barrenness affects not only childless couples, it affects the family, friends, and pastors who love and care for them. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm partnering with Emmanuel Press to publish the second edition of my book, He Remembers the Barren, a story about the hope and contentment found only in Christ, no matter the cross we bear. Visit emmanuelpress.us to learn more. emmanuelpress.us